Hello, I'm Preston Schlankofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disasters might affect you and your community. We're going to do an update to episode 42, which was titled Pandemic Influenza, a Real Threat. Because in the news today, there is an article that talks about this new threat of an outbreak out of China. So let me just read you this. I posted this on the 22nd of January on our Facebook page, so you can scroll through and go back to that. But it's about the coronavirus outbreak, and there's quite a few people that have been affected worldwide, and even some in the United States. So for more details on this, we're going to talk to Drew Bumbeck again about this subject. He has the latest information. So Drew, it's great having you on the show today. What do you got for us?
Well, thanks for having me, Preston. I appreciate being back. Well, like you said, a quick look back at episode 42 on pandemic influenza and the chances there, because obviously we're, you know, right in the middle of Northern Hemisphere's flu season. And while certainly pandemic influenza and seasonal influenza are different animals, you know, we've got kind of an interesting flu season this year in that the primary circulating virus at first was an influenza B, which is unusual for influenza B to be the primary virus strain. We also have a vaccine mismatch with the circulating strains. And now we've got a newly emerging A virus, which is taking preeminence now and getting to be more significant. And the A viruses are what usually cause more of the issues with seasonal flu, but also the A viruses are the ones that generally, the pandemic strains are generally A viruses. So, you know, and we always have a chance for a pandemic because, you know, pandemics are essentially just a novel influenza that most or people or no people have nobody has encountered them before. Their immune systems haven't played with this virus. Therefore, you know, it's a novel virus that our immune systems can't really ramp up to respond to appropriately. You know, I think if you look at some of the estimates, you know, we don't know how likely a pandemic is, but, you know, on average, there are three pandemics per century. And some sources like the UK National Risk Register estimate that there's between a 5 to 50% chance that we'll have a pandemic within the next 5 years. And then there are some researchers who say there's a 1% chance per year of an influenza pandemic that will cause 6 million or more pneumonia and influenza deaths worldwide. So, you know, influenza pandemic is always a potential issue.
Have we not crossed that threshold yet? Because we have people in the Orient that have suffered from this 2019 novel coronavirus, but now we have people in the United States that are affected or believed to be affected by this. So has that not become a true pandemic according to World Health standards?
No. According to World Health Organization, to be a pandemic, you have to have sustained human-to-human transmission. So according to WHO, you have to have sustained human-to-human transmission in two countries in at least one country in two different WHO regions of the world. And so, and there are some other criteria that go along with that, because if you just take sustained human-to-human transmission, then in you know, one country in two different WHO regions, then we would pretty much every year seasonal influenza would be pandemic. So you have other criteria, such as the number of people infected, the severity of the infection. But what it really takes to drive us over the edge from, okay, we have a regular seasonal influenza, for example, taking influenza as the pandemic for the moment, from seasonal influenza, to pandemic, is you have the sustained transmission of a pandemic strain. So rather than a seasonal strain, the WHO pandemic phases, they're calibrated more for influenza and a novel influenza rather than other viruses. But to look at the 2019 novel coronavirus or 2019 nCoV for short, I don't know if I think the jury is still out as to whether or not this has the potential to be a pandemic, because it's brand new. We haven't seen anything like this in a while. The last thing that we've seen kind of like this is the 2003 SARS outbreak, or severe acute respiratory syndrome outbreak that started again in China and then spread to Canada. But and that too was a coronavirus, which in and of itself, we can make some comparisons then between SARS and this, the 2019 nCoV, based on the fact that they're both coronaviruses, but we can only make so many extrapolations from SARS to 2019 nCoV because coronaviruses run the gamut from essentially benign or mild irritants like the common cold. Most times when you get a cold, you have a coronavirus. And it's, you have a mild upper respiratory infection that if at most, maybe lays us low for a day or two, but generally it doesn't even cause that much of anything other than, my nose is running and I'm blowing it all the time and I may have a sore throat and a cough or a sneeze, but it's just an irritant to all the way to significantly fatal things like SARS or 2019 nCoV or also MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, which is also a coronavirus. We have this wide range of severity and so you can't just say, well, because it's a coronavirus, this is what's going to happen, because we don't know until really, especially given that it's a newly emerging disease, we don't know. And particularly given that, it's really only been around for less than a month. So everything, and if you look at the news articles and the updates and the situation reports that both are publicly available and that are coming out within other sources that aren't necessarily publicly available, these things are overtaken by events so quickly it's not even funny. For example, I got a briefing at 11 o'clock this morning that was put out earlier this morning, and it was, looking at it and based on the information in it, it was compiled based on information available probably as of about 9 or 10 Eastern time last night. And by the time it got to me, I looked at it and went, well, this thing is totally out of date. And it was only, it was less than 12 hours old. And or just a little over 12 hours old, and they were talking about something like let me see, I want to say, let me scroll through this email real quick, but I want to say they're saying something like 200 some cases, and or no, they were talking about 40 some cases, as of January 17, which, you know, for the longest time, China was reporting that there were 41 cases, then their case rate ballooned almost overnight from the 17th. What, so 17 was last Friday. So almost overnight, by Sunday, they were reporting, you know, more than double that, in the hundreds. By Monday, Tuesday, they were reporting over 200 by Monday. And then by yesterday, there are more than 317 worldwide. That was reported sometime yesterday. And I don't know what the, honestly, I think we're now approaching more than 400 worldwide, mostly in China, but several in other countries. And similarly, you know, they were saying at one point in time, well, there was one fatality from this in China, and that's it. Now the fatalities, last I heard where I saw a source, was six, but I've also been hearing nine, mostly in China. But so we do have, you know, this is a rapidly evolving situation. And a report that comes out today, certainly by tomorrow, will be overtaken by events, but certainly sometimes it's even possible it's overtaken by events just hours later.
Right.
For example, you know, yesterday we were saying, of course, there's these cases in China, there's a case in Thailand, there's a case in Japan, there's a case in South Korea, and then that's it. Well, then quickly thereafter, we have a case in Taiwan, we have the first case in the U.S., and the first case in North America. So very rapidly evolving.
Yeah, I found a page from the CDC on the 2019 novel coronavirus, Wuhan, China, dated yesterday, as a matter of fact. So that's the latest one that they have. And they just say that they're monitoring it. You know, they'll keep everybody appraised of what's going on. But there's Chinese health authorities posted the full genome of the so-called 2019 coronavirus, or 2019 nCoV, the NIH genetic sequence database, and in the global initiative of sharing all influenza data. You know, they're sharing data back and forth. They're keeping an eye on things, and access to full genetic sequence of the virus will help identify infections with this virus going forward. They're watching it. And they mentioned, given what has occurred previously with MERS and SARS, it's likely that some limited person-to-person spread will continue to occur. I'll include this link in the show notes under resources. So that's one thing we have to look forward to. But the Health Alert Network, HAN, which is put out by CDC, has the latest update on this of the 17th, which they're a week behind times. So CDC doesn't keep all their websites up to date.
Well, and it's really difficult in a situation like this to keep up with it, because, you know, what ends up happening is everything comes, I mean, you get information from multiple different places, and you get some information that's, particularly if it's through a news site, it's because we have this whole 24-hour on thing now, where you have this rush to be first, because if you don't get it out there on your website, if you don't get it out on the air, if you don't get it out in print right away, somebody else will beat you to it. And so the news sites are really 24-hour cycles. They're on 24 hours. It's like, we got to get it out now. And you can't necessarily take what's on a news site as gospel truth, as really reliable information. Because, for example, yesterday, when CDC came out and announced that we had the first U.S. case, There was one news site, and I forget who it was reporting that the patient, the U.S. patient, was a 30-year-old Australian from Brisbane, and he was a part-time resident of the U.S. or something like that, and they got their wires crossed because at the time, Australia was investigating a potential case of a 30-year-old Australian in Brisbane for NCOV. So they conflated the two and essentially made the two one and the same. And that isn't obviously what it was. The U.S. patient is, from what I understand, a U.S. citizen. He's in his 30s, and he's from the Seattle area.
Right.
So, and unfortunately, what happens with a very rapidly evolving situation like this is that, you know, the way things are reported is when China says, oh, we have another case, or we have a fatality, or we have 10 more cases, or we have new cases in a part of the country where we didn't have them before, that gets reported from the local health department up to the Chinese CDC. And Chinese CDC then reports it up to the World Health Organization, and WHO then disseminates that to all the national health organizations around the world. And generally, WHO updates, they'll update more frequently than once a day, but right now they're doing a situational report about once a day. And your reporting cycle, even in like, say, for example, the U.S., to go from the local health department to the CDC and then to the WHO and then back out, it takes some time. And along the way, somebody is going to say something to somebody else who's going to know a reporter who's going to say something to the reporter, or who's going to know somebody who knows a reporter. And you know, so you get this third or fourth or fifth removed source for news. And sometimes, you know, kind of like the old kids game of telephone, things get distorted along the way.
Right.
So you have information out there in the news that, oh, 20 more people died in China, or, you know, the U.S. case is actually a Brisbane man from Australia. Well, and it's not accurate, but it does happen, you know, and so that gets out there. And so you have to pick and choose where you get the information from. And you know, while WHO and CDC are they want to keep the public informed, they also, you know, they have to balance that with giving good and accurate information, and not, because, you know, I think we've pretty much all gotten to the point now where nobody trusts the news media, at least in America. And we're like, okay, yeah, well, you know, whatever website, whatever publication, whatever service, whatever their affiliation, whatever their political leanings, we expect that they're going to get stuff wrong. They're going to rush to publish information because, hey, we'll get there first, and that's more important than waiting and getting scooped. And, you know, we expect them not to be accurate and not to end up coming out and going, either coming out and saying, yeah, we were wrong and we retract this, or we're going to correct this article, or simply being wrong and ignoring it.
Right.
But the CDC can't do that, and WHO can't do that, because when a government agency, when a health organization like that gets something wrong, then, you know, then that's when you end up having people panicking because, oh, hell, you know, WHO said that there were 300 deaths and there's only 3, or, you know, WHO said that this is in 30 different countries and it's actually in 7. So, and then people say, well, who can we trust then? So they have to be more conservative in what they report and how they report.
Yeah.
You know,
they definitely have to be careful on their reporting, but at the same time, people need information, and there's a lot of information out there for anybody who wants to research it, to get the information. And that's one of the reasons why we're bringing it to everybody today, is because it's something that we need to know about and be aware of, because it's something that can sneak up on us if we're not, one, prepared personally. As a community, we should be aware and prepared as well.
Absolutely. I agree. And I think, you know, people do need to be aware, and people need to, if they really want to be aware on something like this or influenza, you know, they need to look at, first off, they need to look at official sites like CDC and WHO, and also like the European infectious disease folks, or the European CDC. But another great place that people can really keep abreast of infectious disease information is CIDRAP, which is the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at University of Minnesota. CIDRAP is a great site, and it's a great program, and it's under Michael Osterholm, and he's an incredible researcher primarily on influenza, but on infectious disease in general, and they really keep their finger on the pulse of infectious disease around the world, and they really act as a really good aggregating site for infectious disease research and news and on both ongoing stuff and emerging viruses or emerging diseases. So they're a great source, and they generally, you're not going to find, they're somewhat conservative, unlike a lot of news sites, so you're not going to find outrageous claims. And they're also, they're trained scientists who deal with this on a regular basis, and so they blend in the science very nicely too, unlike news sites where, you know, you're going to find some news sites saying, oh my God, this is the next pandemic, where there are some reasons why this could be a pandemic, and there are a lot of reasons why this might not turn into a pandemic, and which we can get into in a minute. But, you know, there, CIDRAP will be much more level-headed about it.
Right. Yeah. I found a more alarming headline than just a standard one, but I don't see it now. But there, when I was doing a little bit of research, and I opened these up and saved them, and let me see, what was it? Here's one by Wired. Could China's new coronavirus become a global global epidemic? I'm sorry. So you know, there's a lot of reporting going on out there about this, because it can be something really serious. So since we've kind of beat it up already, can you go ahead and remind us how to prepare for these types of viruses and these types of incidents that can spread so quickly and be hazardous to not only ourselves, our families, and our neighborhoods and community, but to the nation?
Absolutely. Well, obviously, the best advice is keep in the best health you possibly can. And you know, that varies from individual to individual. And, you know, some of us have underlying conditions that make us more susceptible to infectious disease. Some of us don't have that issue. So know your situation and keep in the best health you possibly can. And that means, you know, exercise, eat right, get plenty of sleep, you know, take vitamins. I know that medical science says, well, we're not sure about vitamins, but and their effect on the immune system. But, you know, there are certain vitamins that if you don't get enough of, you develop diseases. And there are certain vitamins that, you know, we think we're pretty sure we don't have conclusive evidence, but we think boost the immune system. And so, and we also know that sleep deprivation depresses your immune system.
Yes.
There are other things, you know, lots of things like not getting enough to eat, not getting enough sleep, getting your sleep-wake cycle thrown off. That can also screw with your immune system. So, you know, keep your immune system as and your body as healthy as you possibly can. So that's a huge thing. Another thing is during cold and flu season, which generally is in the winter in whichever hemisphere you live. So in the northern hemisphere, it's in the, you know, the end of the year and the beginning of the year. In the southern hemisphere, it's in what would be our summer, you know, June, July, August, maybe May and September as well. But during cold and flu season in your hemisphere, practice social distancing. You know, wash your hands regularly because most of these infectious diseases are, they're not fully aerosolized where they're you know, just tiny, tiny droplets. They're heavier droplets. So you have to have at least some contact either with a person or, you know, you can get it. Also wash your hands regularly because you can get it from touching a doorknob. For example, if I have flu or if I have, God forbid, I have 2019 NCOV and I cough on my hand and then I touch the doorknob and you come along 3 hours later and touch that same doorknob and then you rub your eyes or you take some food and eat it or you blow your nose or, you know, you have the potential to get it because these viruses can survive for about 24 hours on surfaces under normal conditions. Okay. So wash your hands regularly, both if you're, and if you're sick, don't go out, you know, don't go to the store and cough on people. Don't go to work when you're sick. Don't send your kids to school when they're sick. I mean, that's just plain rude and obnoxious behavior. Unfortunately, you see that a lot nowadays with people who are like, well, I'm sick, but I'm going to work anyway. And I'm proud because I haven't taken a sick day in 20 years. Well, okay, you may be proud. Everybody else hates you, you know. So be considerate of others. Don't go to work and get them sick. And, you know, and those are really the big things. And also be cognizant of the diseases that are out there. For example, you know, 2019 NCOV. One of the good things, I'm doing something I said not to do, but extrapolating from what we know about all other coronaviruses, except for MERS, is that we know that the other coronaviruses, SARS included, are communicable only during the acute and convalescent phases of the infection. In other words, when the patient has frank signs and symptoms, when they obviously feel sick, when they say, I have a fever, I have a headache, I'm coughing, I'm sick, and when they're getting better from being sick, they're shedding virus.
Okay. Yeah, they're contagious at that
unlike,
point. Yeah.
Yeah. Unlike flu, though, because flu, you are actually shedding virus and contagious before you have frank signs and symptoms. Sometimes a day, sometimes two or three. It really depends. You're shedding virus during the late phase of the incubation period before you actually become sick. Mm. And that's there's some thought that that may also be the case with Ebola. But coronaviruses, with the exception of MERS, we do not know communicability period for MERS is because we don't have a lot of cases of it. We just haven't nailed it down to say that, yes, this person was sick with MERS and went to the hospital and showed frank signs and symptoms on the 18th, but this other person who was in contact with them on the 15th now has MERS and wasn't in contact with anybody else who has MERS. So then we can say, well, there's evidence that they're shedding virus before they actually have signs and symptoms. So, but all the other coronaviruses where we've nailed it down, we know that you have to have signs and symptoms or be recovering from having signs and symptoms to be shedding virus. So that's different from influenza. So that makes it more likely that this isn't going to be a pandemic, because while there is now confirmed sustained human-to-human transmission, not just clusters, but actually WHO, from what I understand, is reporting that there is sustained human-to-human transmission in China.
But nowhere else.
Hopefully.
Okay.
You have to be symptomatic to transmit it. So that makes it easier to say, hey, that person's coughing and sneezing and they've got snot running out of their nose and they're hacking all over the place. I'm going to stay away from them, you know. And that's another thing. When you see people out in public who are coughing and sneezing and they're acting sick, stay away from them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's going to have to be the last word. So civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based, grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with a guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to also check out our postings at Facebook, where I post a lot, and Twitter, where I post every once in a while. Our Twitter handle is @civil_def_radio. Also, our Facebook, go back to that. It's @civildefenseradio. And like I said, I post a lot of stuff there. So you'll find a lot of information there, probably 3, 4, 5 posts a day. I wish to thank Drew again for being with us. And it's always great having him here because we always get a lot of information from Drew. And that's a great educated thing to have. And so we want to thank you, our friends and listeners who are with us regularly. Well, I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.